Welcome to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today we're going to talk a little bit about satellite communication and how technology has really evolved to help provide solutions. We're going to really hone in on the Arctic, and that's an area these days when you consider some of the events that are going on around the world, deserve some attention. I mean, we don't often think about it, but if you need to have reliable communications, life-saving communications in land, air, or sea, you need to be thinking about satellite. Our guest today is Gil Fortin. He is with Amerisat, and he is the Sales Director of Global Development. He's going to share with us what some of the challenges are, and he's going to give us a perspective that you might not have thought of before. So, Gil, welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're talking about communication services, and I think now it's probably more prevalent than ever. Satellite services, I know we were talking before the show with some of the things that Elon Musk is doing, are becoming much more reasonable and mainstream. But why is it so important for the Arctic, do you think, right now?
Well, the main reason that we've seen a lot more people talk about it over the last, I would say, 2 to 3 years, is largely because of the changes in the environment, where as global warming kicks in, access to the Arctic has improved significantly. And as a result of that, you see a lot more exploration taking place in the Arctic, people looking for more natural resources, whether that's minerals of some sort, or people companies and countries doing a lot more fishing in those areas. There's a lot more traffic in the sense of tourists that want to go up and visit the Arctic. And so, those are just the sort of the non-military reasons why people have a broader need to or desire to go to the Arctic. From the military perspective, I think there's obviously now, as you mentioned, the what's happening in Europe with Ukraine. It's highlighted the fact that for us as Canadians, it's imperative that to have a better presence in the Arctic to protect our sovereignty up there, and whether that's done through military means or through non-military means with access, with folks like the Coast Guard going up there more often or RCMP. The talk of the Arctic communications has certainly gone front and center more so recently, but it's been there for quite some time.
Well, I would think satellite communication in the Arctic, obviously for emergency services and military. But what about too? I mean, you need that reliability for sure. But what about if you're doing remote training? What if you're doing online courses and everything else to, for people who are living there, they've got kids or they're taking courses themselves to improve?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's in the Arctic, you've seen, it's difficult to get copper up there. It costs a lot of money, to bring towers up there costs a lot of money. It's not access to what we take for granted here in urban areas. Is very difficult for those remote regions, and so satellite oftentimes is the most economical way to get services up there. So you bring in a satellite link, and then you provide these what they call community aggregators, where they rebroadcast either cellular services or UHF or VHS services to the community. But we've seen, for many years now, things like distance learning, as you mentioned, that's been used quite a lot in non-military capacities. Satellite services have been used in hospitals, where you have doctors, the telemedicine piece. We have doctors in an urban area here, say in Ottawa, and transmitting to a hospital say in the Arctic, in Kalawit or some other place where there's doctors there that need specialty type services. So telemedicine has been around for quite some time. And it's still a requirement. It's still very, very, very relevant today. And I don't see those services going away at any time in the near future. But those have been services that have been what I would qualify as broadband services. And I think it's important to make a distinction between what we commonly call broadband services versus the narrowband piece of the world. Fixed satellite service providers have been known to be more broadband, and they offer broadband services that would be, say, anything above 2 to 3 megs, per second in terms of throughput. On the narrowband side of things, you're looking at smaller bits of data that are pushed into smaller terminals. And these are generally used for voice and small bits of data, like GPS coordinates and so on, or to transmit text messages. So narrowband services have of late been more used in the Arctic. But yeah, what you're referencing there, John, is definitely something that's been around for quite some time through fixed service providers. But I think you will find that as more companies are launching satellites, and particularly in the MSS, what's been commonly known as the mobile world, or the narrowband providers, there's a bit more broadband type services being offered by operators who operate, say, in the LEO constellation, and so types of services that have been commonly used, sort of as I mentioned, like the community aggregators, you'll still see those, but you'll start to see those from not generally your FSS providers, but more your MSS providers, and so I would expect that you'll see that in the next 2 to 3 years as more people launch services or more organizations launch services in the Arctic.
You know, Gil, there's a lot of talk about LEO operators. What are LEO operators, and why are they best suited to be providing services in the Arctic?
So the LEOs, so low Earth orbit operators, there's. But I would, in the industry, the lingo, the jargon, as they say, you have the LEO operators, so low Earth orbit operators, the MEOs, medium Earth orbit operators, the HEOs, the highly elliptical operators, and then you have the GEOs, so the geostationary operators. And so the LEO operators have taken on a bit more, I would say, not a bit, but certainly a lot more space in the discussion that we talk today, because of organizations like Starlink. You mentioned Elon Musk earlier, where they launch these colossal, or at least they plan to launch these colossal constellations of several thousands of small satellites, and so. The GEO providers don't necessarily need that many satellites to cover the Earth, but certainly when you're a LEO operator, when you're in low Earth orbit, you need a lot more satellites to cover the surface of the Earth. And so what you've typically seen over the years is that the GEO operators have launched, as I mentioned earlier, the broadband type services. They offer mobile services, so you got a good mix of different types of services there from the GEO players, the MEO players as well. You've seen a good mix of both fixed and mobile services, and in the LEO piece, you're now starting to see a convergence of what used to be primarily just mobility, so mobile services, narrowband services for the LEO providers. Now that's transitioning into more of the broadband type of services, which you're seeing from organizations like Elon Musk's Starlink constellation. And it's caused us to broaden our discussion, because now you're able to provide a lot more services when you're talking about broadband than you typically would if you're talking strictly narrowband. And the advantage to having organizations launch more services, of course, is that it creates a more competitive landscape for providers. And as a rule of thumb, you know, when you have a more competitive landscape, that, you know, the price points tend to be reduced, and to make it more appealing for not just government agencies to purchase services, but certainly non-government agencies, so private industry, where they can offer more like private services, like geared for tracking products, for doing more environmental work as well, to track the icebergs, or to track animals, or animal tracking, those sort of things. So you'll find a lot more of those as more players get into the LEO landscape.
So in other words, it's going to open up more. We've talked already a little bit about what groups would benefit from satellite services. I mean, obviously, military applications, I think, would be a big one. Talked about healthcare and emergency services. And we've talked about people who just have jobs that require that kind of connectivity. I guess what I would ask you is, compared to how communications are with satellite services now, what does the future look like compared to how they're used today? How do you think that's going to unfold? I guess more mainstream access would be one of them, but what else?
So you're right. More mainstream access will definitely change over the next 2 to 3 years. Bear in mind, there's only a handful of providers that are able to provide services there today. And as a result of that, your price points for accessing those services is not cheap as compared to the terrestrial services that are available, such as cellular today. I would say that the expansion of players up there will definitely bring the price points down. And as price points reduce, there will be more companies attracted to going up there to provide certain types of services. Whether that's an expansion of things that are already in place, like the broadband services you and I had talked about, like the telemedicine stuff, or the distance learning, or the community aggregators, those models will always be there. But as the price points decrease, there may be more of those available to different communities. But on the narrowband piece, people that are looking for a specific type of services, either for public safety, for example, the RCMP may be going up there more often now to respond to search and rescue operations, through work they do with Coast Guard or Transport Canada. You'll see probably a lot more of those, simply because as more people go up there, I think there's a social responsibility for government to provide a certain level of service, to people that are up there. I think that's an area where you'll see some changes there. Elon Musk has done a fantastic job of opening the dialogue people to look beyond the typical broadband services, in terms of what creative ways services can be used. There's been other players up there in the past that have done a reasonable job of penetrating the market, but they've been challenged in that their technology didn't allow them to provide broadband type services. So you know, if you look at Iridium, for example, very good organization, but there's a limit there in how much data you can push through to any one of their terminals. And as a result of that, it limits your ability to do certain things. With organizations like, I keep harping back the Elon Musk piece, but like Starlink, you're now able to take broadband type services and to apply them to smaller devices. And as a result of that, more organizations or more companies are becoming creative to build new solutions that will operate up there. I know in our case, for what the products and services we're looking to launch in those general areas, you should see a large influx of new products and terminals that will be applied to end users in the Arctic.
So how is Inmarsat addressing those issues now?
The way we currently sell our services today is both in the narrowband and the broadband capacity, but we do that through two separate constellations in the geostationary arc. We offer L-band services and Ka services. The L-band services are generally lower throughput type of services, and then our Ka services are more commonly known as broadband type services. And again, we offer those in the mobility space. But because we're in the geostationary arc, we're limited to our coverage of the arc. We don't. In fact, this isn't just a unique thing to Inmarsat, but certainly all operators who have satellites in the geostationary arc don't necessarily have very good coverage of either poles, be it the North Pole or the South Pole. And so, what we're doing to address that is we're looking. In fact, we will be launching in 2023 two new satellites, which will go over the North Pole in the HEO orbit. And these will be able to provide 24-hour-a-day coverage of the North Pole. And the nice thing is with this particular constellation is that it will be tied into our existing Ka infrastructure. So you'll be able to have broadband services in a mobile and in a fixed capacity anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. So big changes for the types of services that you'll see in the next 2 to 3 years.
I think that's great for those communities, and it sounds like it's a competitive edge for you. Gil, I want to talk to you a little bit about government-sponsored satellites. Do you believe the government-sponsored satellite programs are the only way to resolve Arctic communication challenges?
It definitely helps. It definitely helps. And that's simply because of just the economies of scale. Regardless of whether you're a LEO operator, a MEO operator, a HEO operator, or even a GEO operator, let's be honest. I mean, you need to be able to tap into the larger consumer base, and that larger consumer base is in the more populated areas. And so, when you're looking to launch services in the Arctic, it helps a lot if you have a government subsidy to offset some of those costs. Because I mean, to be fair, launching satellites is not cheap. It's and once they're launched, the life expectancy of these satellites varies, but based on the amount of fuel they have on board. But generally, I would say that you've got 10. Well, if it's in, particularly if it's in the HEO or geostationary arc, you're looking at 12 to 15 years lifespan. Whereas the LEO operators, you're looking at significantly less because they're closer to the Earth. And as they get closer to the Earth, the laws of physics play a greater impact on those assets. Gravity becomes a challenge when you're in the LEO and in the MEO constellations.
Well, you guys have been powering global connectivity for over four decades, so I'm sure you've seen it all. And I think if you're in the Arctic, consistent communication is definitely a need. by land, air, or sea, that's for sure. But, you know, I'd be curious to ask you, what's the cost versus the benefit of communication comparisons for those who live there? Is it getting closer to like what you have in suburbia and cities where, you know, are we close to that point where it's like when you have a cell phone plan and things become, you know, more accessible, and are the costs coming down? What do you see for the future on that?
There's still a fair amount of disparity between, say, the cellular costs that you and I are accustomed to in urban areas versus the cost of satellite in you know, that's geared more for the remote areas. I think if you look at the prices over the last 20 years, they have gone down significantly on the satellite piece, where you're getting closer to that parity that you're referencing. But I think it's still a matter of quite some time before you get into the price points that you're that we've come to expect in the what I qualify as terrestrial communications world, where there's towers, cellular towers or microwave towers. You know, we're just not there yet. There's work happening on constellations that will be launched in the next few years that are helping drive that price down, but it's not quite there yet. There's I think at least another 2 to 3, maybe 4 years of things to happen yet before we see significant price changes, and you'll see like a lot of, you know, what will drive a lot of those costs as well is that when you look at the satellite landscape, or at least the satellite operator landscape, there's quite a lot of operators out there. So I think it's fair to say that there's an expectation there that a lot of those players will consolidate at some point. And through this consolidation, hopefully that will help drive some of those costs down to make it more affordable for the average consumer. Right now, if you look at the average consumer, he or she are not buying satellite services unless they absolutely have to. We mentioned earlier those community aggregators or the telemedicine stuff. These are types of services that cost a lot of money. And to tie into your question on the government piece, those are usually subsidized through the government. Your average consumer probably would not be using these services because the costs are quite high. I think some of the narrowband providers have done a great job at trying to bring those price points down, but they're still not there yet. There's still quite a bit of a disparity there between the satellite providers and the terrestrial cellular providers.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's a little bit of a trade-off, but it's evolving fairly quickly, and technology is really generating quite a few new opportunities. And there's been a lot of, I guess, media around satellites because of people like Elon Musk. You've been listening to Vanguard Radio, and we're talking about the challenges of satellite communication, specifically in the Arctic. It's been a very interesting show, and I want to thank our guest, Gil Fortin from Inmarsat. He's the Sales Director of Global Development, and thank you for coming on, Gil.
You're welcome. Thank you, John.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.